Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August the 3rd. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Public Works Director, Mr. Tom Manson.
Good morning.
And it is public works we are talking about today, not some of the other areas.
Purely public works.
Purely. All right. Are you ready for our question? This one. Go ahead.
Go ahead and stump me again.
All right. Why do ostriches put their heads in the ground?
Because it's cooler in the ground than in the desert?
Ostriches rarely put their head in the ground, but when they do, they're looking for water.
Ah.
Oh.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of blows a lot of the cartoons out of the air, though.
Yeah. Makes total sense. Gotta dig for water. Gotta have a well.
Yeah. It's kind of an ugly well, but that's okay.
You know, a well is a well. If you got water, you got water.
Yeah, boy.
Water is life.
And particularly this year, I know there's a lot of discussion with the drought and things of that nature, too.
Oh, yeah.
Does that change your guys' day-to-day procedures when you're out doing stuff?
Not necessarily. The water restrictions that we deal with have been around for a long time. And it goes back to the days when we could just go down to the river and suck water out of the river and use it. And can't do that anymore. So we are actually putting in storage tanks at some of our facilities so we can go in the winter with our permit and get water out of the rivers and fill up our storage tanks so this time of year we have water available when we need it.
So that when you're like dusting, or not dusting watering down a dusty road, that kind of stuff?
Grading, or if we happen to be mowing where it's dry, we have to have a water truck because, you know, the mower
just
has
in case.
Metal blades, and it can start fires in general.
You haven't converted over to fiberglass blades yet?
No.
I heard a story last week. It was talking about the blades of some of the windmills that are, like, in Wyoming, the big circular ones.
Yep.
They're somehow extracting, and I don't know how, but they're extracting the glass out of it, the fiberglass.
Really?
And there's a secondary market for that stuff.
Really?
And I thought, wow, that's somebody must have had a really bad day to come up with the concept. And then a weak moment to invest whatever the dollars are to get to that point and make sure that there's a market. But, boy, talk about a market. And one of those things has got to be worth a gazillion dollars, but nobody charges you for it.
Exactly.
Now you've got this resource, and they're all coming due at the same time. Yeah.
That kind of ties into recycling in America and how we can't do it because we don't have markets for all the recycled material.
Yeah, once it's done, who wants it?
We need a person like that to look at our aluminum and our glass and everything else and make an American market so we don't have to rely on overseas to recycle.
Well, maybe we can get somebody who's got too much money and too much time on their hands to build rocket ships and use aluminum.
Ah. There seems to be a couple of those out there.
Yeah, imagine that. Construction season.
It's got
to be keeping you guys hopping in. It's got to be interesting because it's so prolonged. Last week, Merritt Perry was in.
Yep.
And he said, you know, in the old days, we had construction season, and it didn't start till here, and it didn't go beyond this point, and it was kind of like a lockdown. And everything kind of flowed that way, and now everything kind of stretches, and it's far more pliable these days.
Are you
able to take advantage of that?
Yeah, it's like the fire season used to be. Now it's extended just because, and that's the way construction works. You know, generally it's April 15th to October 15th, but, you know, we start looking at the weather, and we're putting out bids in, you know, December and January, getting people ready to go to work. And if the weather looks good, we'll start early. And after October 15th, we just constantly watch the weather, and we continue to go until the weather shuts us down. And nowadays, it's usually November, December.
The holidays get you.
Yep.
It's a tinsel. Now, you guys do an awful lot. The crews do an awful lot. On their own without outside contractors.
Yep.
But you've also got the outside contractors, too. Are you running into some of the labor shortages or the challenges?
Everybody is. It is so difficult right now to find qualified labor, especially for what we pay. Even the contractors are having a lot of trouble finding labor because you know, we didn't do a lot of construction for many, many years, and people left the state that were experienced and went elsewhere. And now the contract.
Oh, so it's not regional, it's statewide.
Yeah, the contractors are having to rebuild their industry in California to climb up to what is needed. And that requires a lot of new people. You know, construction's not an easy job. While it may pay well, it is hard on the body. It's you know, it's not an easy life when you're popping around all over the place working on projects. You're not at home. It's difficult, but I know the contracting industry is working very, very hard to train new employees. You know, we have a lot of problems trying to hire new individuals.
Is it specialized, or is it just getting folks that want to work?
It's everywhere because, you know, believe it or not, there is so much construction work going on right now. It's just. You know, you have the labor shortage and the increased construction, both timing together, and a lot of people retiring. And it's just you lose those qualified people, and you're bringing in a young kid, and you have to train them. Takes, you know, several years to get a very good operator.
And the efficiencies are probably.
And the efficiencies are lower because they're not experienced. But they have to. We have to train them. We have to bring them in and get the careers going.
The big guys, the Mercer Frasers, was it Gelati? I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name.
Gelati, yeah.
Yeah. Is that why we see them in areas that we traditionally wouldn't see them? Is because the other guys either can't handle it or they're already engaged in other contracts?
All the contractors are everywhere right now. There is just so much work going on out there. You know, we have to let timelines slide because we know there's, you know, just not the number of contractors needed to do all the work.
Just be a reasonable partner.
Just being a reasonable, exactly. Working with the contracting industry to make sure that, you know, once we award a bid that they can get to it and get the work done in a timely manner. But understanding that a lot of them have a number of other jobs going on, all that are important throughout the county, whether it's for the state, the county, or a city.
That you apparently can read, not only read my writing, but you can read it upside down, which is truly frightening. I don't know if that skill set exists anywhere else in the world, but I had written down city or county versus city versus state. You know, they're still all in our neighborhood, but different types of contracts, different works, and we'll talk about some of those various projects when we come back.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 824. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson from Humboldt County Public Works. Tom, the various jurisdictions, you know, we just touched on it in the last break, or the last segment, rather, county, city, state, okay, special districts, we could throw those guys in there, too. Everybody's kind of vying for things to get their projects done in a timely manner, you know, particularly now that there's a little bit of wiggle room. A little bit more money. We got this, we got that. But there's only so many asphalt machines in the area.
Yep.
And there's only so many, you know, tractors of this or of that style. How do you work your way through? Is it a partnering? Is it a spider web? Is it my way or the highway? I mean, I can't imagine any of those are going to be pure during this period of time when everybody's competing and trying to get their stuff done for their constituents.
Well, you have to be flexible. The contracts are very specific. You know, we have to put more time into them because we know it's going to take a while to get people to our jobs. you know, none of us, you know, we do some projects with the cities that we all hire one contractor together to do a certain type of work, like slurry seals. We do joint bids, and one contractor will come in and do all of the agencies at once. But most of our projects, they're, you know, they're very separate. They're not intertwined, so they may have a contract with the city and the county and the state at the same time, and they have to prioritize their workload, and, you know, sometimes it gets down to what's it going to cost me in delay on this project to how much it's going to make me on this project, and the contractors have to weigh that balance when they're out bidding on projects. But, you know, once we get them bid and under contract, they're under contract, and, you know, so most of them are smart enough to not overload themselves with work where they're losing money every day for delayed.
Yeah.
But also it's very hard because you want to lock that work up because, you know, your future is uncertain unless you have a bunch of contracts lined up.
So if we look at then the construction season and the expansion, are there more jobs being bid later in the season? Or are there, like, conditionals? You put an asterisk. If the weather permits, this contract goes into effect, and it's at this road, this location, da-da-da-da-da, and this is the work to be done.
So we bid year-long. We're constantly putting out bids. But if we're putting out bids in November or December, you know, we're going to put in there the start date is not until April. And so that's
negotiable. And they can start earlier if
and sometimes
possible?
They can start earlier if they can,
okay.
If the weather holds. But most of the time, you know, where we're even if we're bidding early, we're, you know, setting the summer schedule up. And then we have to look at our staff and the consultants we use to manage these projects. We have to make sure we have enough engineers. You know, you have to have an registered engineer on each site under, you know, state-funded projects or federally funded projects. And so we have to look at our staffing and, you know, the outside consultants and what can we handle, let alone what the contractor can handle. If we put out too much work and we can't cover it, then we can't get reimbursed for it. And we don't know that it's done right, it's not documented right, and we can't do that. And so it's a balance on both sides. This year we're pushing our limit. We're probably going to be doing about $30 million in contract work. Normally,
you should be smiling when you say that.
I am happy.
Compared to past years,
Compared to past years. Yeah. Unfortunately, most of it is storm damage. I would rather do new improvements than storm
new
damage.
Fun, yeah.
But it is what it is. You know, storm damage, when it occurs, right now we're doing a lot of the projects that got damaged in 2017. Because it takes 2 or 3 years to get through the federal or the state process to get things approved, funded, designed, permitted. You know, it can take 3 or 5 years to get something on the ground and 60 days for the contractor to finish it. It's, you know, there's a lot of lead work that goes into it. But we got hammered in 2017 and 2019, and, you know, next year and the year after, there's going to be a lot of 2019 storm damage out there.
But you're getting the old stuff off the checklist.
We're trying to clear our books. Unfortunately, clearing our books doesn't mean we get reimbursed in a timely manner. We're still getting checks from work we did back in 2006 from the federal government because the way the funding works is they approve a lump sum, and then 90% of that goes to former projects, while 10% goes to the current damage, and therefore you're financing the 90% of the current damage for years on end.
So, and that's something you have to bake into your budget.
It's accounts receivable is what we call it.
Heavy underlined the receivable part.
Yes, maybe receivable. Generally, the money does come in, but like I say, it can be years before we get reimbursed.
So with that kind of a challenge that's out there, these extended periods of time, do you really want to maximize them? If all it's doing is adding to your receivables and adding to your finance charges.
If you don't, the road doesn't get fixed. when we're looking at, you know, multi-million-dollar projects, that's not something the county can afford without getting the reimbursement. You know, my base
even 10 years down the road.
Even 10 years down the road, you know,
don't notice the bad pun there. Good. Okay. As long as it registered.
I got it. I'm slow this morning, but I got it. But, you know, like I say, our baseline budget is about $15 million a year. So if I'm putting out $30 million in construction projects, I have to have that reimbursed. There's just no way I can fund it on my own, or otherwise the roads just stay washed out, and we can't have that.
So can you lean into either the state representatives or the federal representatives of our area and say, guys, me and all these other small counties behind me, we're all in the same boat here, and we got to have this stuff. As more monies are becoming available, that's putting us even in a more leveraged position.
Well, that usually falls on deaf ears. You know, it's not just small counties. I think L.A. County's in their rears over $100 million with FEMA right now from former damage. It's nationwide, and it's just the way that the emergency funding program works. Or doesn't.
Or doesn't, yes. It's 8:30.
Forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson. Tom, now, we've been talking about some of the neat stuff that's going on, some of the challenges that you've got, but you also were able to get some of the Measure Z money.
A little bit, yep.
Yeah. The project, I think, is one that, I don't know if it's public pressure that allowed it, if it was the engineering side that allowed it, if it was school zone, if that allowed it. But to put a stoplight on F Street, I would think for a lot of folks is going to be really cool, and for a lot of folks is going to be a hassle. How do you balance that?
Well, it'll be balanced because it will only get triggered on the Oak Street sides when there's traffic on it. Main drag normally, but when there's traffic on the side streets, they'll be allowed to exit. And the issue there is, you know, people getting T-boned and when they're pulling out of the intersection.
This is a Grand Elementary School for folks that are unfamiliar. There's an elementary school.
Yeah, there's a standard for how many crashes at an intersection that justify a signal, and that intersection meets that standard. It is a public safety issue because people are getting in crashes and getting injured.
But 8th Street doesn't have that. Same.
There's not nearly the traffic coming out of Oak on H as there is on Oak and F, and the visibility on Oak and H is so much better. It's a wider road. There's much better visibility. The whole school zone on one side, so there's no houses, no parking, basically. So there's not a crash history there that's equivalent to the Oak and F. And
I know it's tough now, but if you look at F and I suppose any of the smaller roads in any town that were put in, let's say, in the 40s.
Yep.
Okay. Vehicles were of a certain size, traveled at a certain speed. The commercial rigs were of a certain dimension also, and things were okay. But as rigs got bigger, now we've got parking on the street kind of squeezing going in.
Yep.
And the rigs themselves going faster, less wiggle room. Is that something that a lot of cities are having to deal with? And you don't want condemnation. You don't want to take people's front yards.
No.
But, you know, you can see that where it's happened in a lot of the main drags in Eureka and Arcata, where it had to happen, so it was done. That isn't where you want to go. So is this kind of the way to get around having to grab property?
It's a way to solve the crash problem at that intersection. The traffic problem, it's everywhere. The roads were built when the roads were built, and as things grew, the roads did not. And so now you have vehicles that you can drive 55 and not even feel like you're doing 25. You know, and it's just, you know, times change and the infrastructure has not kept up with it. And so when you look at retooling all of the infrastructure for the current age, that is so far beyond the money available. You have to look spot by spot, you know, section by section and see what can I do, what can I do.
So as you look at that specific neighborhood, there is an alley. Do you take into consideration what kind of parking on street is going to be permitted if there's an alley where folks can get access, or is it historical usage that takes precedence?
Well, the issue there is there are several houses that don't even have driveways or garages. And so, you know, they really need their on-street parking. We had proposed to eliminate it, and that did not get approved by our board.
That issue surfaced? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that issue did surface.
Another pun.
You know,
that's
surface.
Two. Yes.
That's two in the morning.
Yeah,
boy,
both went by you too.
I need another cup of coffee then. But yeah, we always look at the cheapest alternative first. But again, it is our community. They're our residents, and we have to be cognizant of their needs as well, and do what we can to minimize our impact to any individual while maximizing our impact to the public as a whole.
So as you then look at Cutton.
Yep.
Okay. Either you wear your set of rose-colored glasses, or you're looking at this going, okay, this is the same situation, but it just hasn't come to fruition yet. I mean, you got Walnut that's a little bit larger, but any of the side streets, things are, as development is going to be happening,
yep,
things are challenging, and then you're dumping into pick your street, Eureka, that isn't designed. Do you worry about what happens on the other side of the city boundary?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have constant communication with the city on development impacts that are going to, you know, the development will happen in the county and all the jobs are in the city. And so that's where the people are going to travel to. And so, you know, we have to look at all the intersections. You know, development comes up. We take a look at, okay, what now needs to be signalized everywhere? Where's the traffic going to go? What are going to be impacts that we just can't deal with society-wise because it's too expensive? And, you know, what can we actually do to funnel people in to where they need to go? And can we get people out of their cars and travel in different modes so that there isn't the traffic that generated by every household?
So you're going to start putting in tethers for horses?
Actually, in McKinleyville, we do have a bridle trail on Central Ave. It's not been used much lately, but it was designed into Central Avenue.
I thought that was a go-kart trail.
No, that's okay. Called the bridle trail, and it's on the side of the road.
And it's DLE, not DAL?
Oh, you lost me again. That's
Bridle?
Oh, yeah.
Really? I lost you on that one, too.
That's three strikes. I'm out.
Oh, man. Traffic calming.
Yes.
Big discussion points, right? Yes. We got the donuts in the road. We got tables. We got bumps. We got flashing lights.
You got chicanes.
What's that one?
Where you zigzag back and forth around.
Oh, like Lombard?
Or Lombard, but.
Yeah, that concept of.
L Street, Old Town,
okay.
Second Street in Old Town.
Oh, the islands.
Not the islands, just the way the road curves back and forth with the bulbouts.
As you look at some of the challenges that are out there, are any of these applicable that would really do?
Almost all of them have known improvements in both reducing speeding and reducing crashing. And so you really, you have to look at the street and see, you know, what is most effective there. And again, it comes down to, does the county have the money to invest? And, you know,
not the willingness to take the phone calls?
That we're always willing to do. We're always willing to talk about it. We're always willing to search for funding.
I meant the complaint calls.
I take a lot of those, yes.
Okay. Because I would think some of those speed tables, Old Arcata Road.
Yep.
Okay. You know, as long as the paint is maintained so you can see it
instead of getting
slammed by it. To me, something like that would make a ton of sense along, let's say, F Street, in addition to what you're doing. If speeding, according to the slug signs, speeding is a big issue, okay, drop a couple of those in.
You have to balance that with emergency response. And, you know, we generally will not put or recommend speed humps on main streets like F Street, simply because if an ambulance has to get to somebody's house, I don't want to be responsible for them dying of a heart attack because they were 5 minutes behind because they had to hit the speed humps. So we have to look at different things on those.
But those are the main drags, though, where most people are speeding and we get into that
conundrum.
Challenge. Yeah.
It's a conundrum because those are also the streets that our first responders use to respond to fires, heart attacks, you name it.
Yeah, you don't want 40,000 gallons of water sloshing.
No, not at all. So, that's why we have to look at signals. We have to look at different things that don't impede an ambulance or a fire truck or a police car from going down that road in an emergency.
And a signal with the blip is probably the most efficient way to be able to make it.
The signals, we do have overrides in there for the fire trucks. So they can flip the signals green automatically for them and keep them green. And so that's been going on for the last few that we put in. That technology is out there. So, yes, it helps the general public and everybody else in the community. But when the emergency responders need to go through, they can go through and get to where they need to do as quick as possible.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly an American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson. Tom, the concept of bulb outs,
yep.
I don't know if they are controversial, if they are just novel. Okay, so we've got that going on. We've got the goofy, and I'll call them goofy, non-technical term, by the way, the goofy stuff that is going in that has like the little runway in the middle of it.
Yep.
But the big curbs on the edges, yep. I'm looking at those things. If trip and fall is a big deal, lawsuit-wise, every one of those things looks like it's a pending trip and fall. If somebody has a little bit of an issue with eyesight or gets pushed, boom, now they're out in the traffic instead of not being there and having smooth. Is that new design technology that is been proven to be effective?
It's proven to be very effective, and I've never received or seen anywhere a trip and fall claim on that design. Those are designed to meet the American with Disabilities Act. So if you're vision impaired or you're in a wheelchair, they're really there for pedestrian safety, to give people a safe place to stand in the road or cross the road or reduce the cross. The bulb outs are for reducing
the exposure.
Yeah, reducing your exposure to a vehicle. And then on the driver's side, they tend to narrow the road down and people tend to slow down and they're looking for people because they see these things.
Is that the most effective? I mean, we were talking in the last segment about the emergency rigs. Does that help those guys in those areas where there aren't those lights?
Yeah, it does not slow down the emergency rigs at all, but it vastly improves pedestrian and bike safety for people crossing the street.
Well, I guess why is it taking so long then to do this? Is it financial?
Yeah, they're not cheap. Our curb ramps are running about 10 grand a pop for every intersection we touch, and that adds up really, really quick, and the standards to build them are very, very strict.
Yeah, I noticed that. Play ball with Rick Olson, REO.
Yep.
And he's got a level. They've got the little, it looks like they're building fine cabinetry.
Yep.
And I suspect do they have to hit the numbers or have a minimum number that they have to hit?
They have to hit the numbers, pure and simple. If you exceed the tolerance, it comes out and you have to redo it. The ADA requirements are very, very, very specific. The standards are very specific, and
therefore, so is the construction.
So is the construction, and REO's stacks have become very, very good. They've done a number of them, and yes, it was difficult to start with, but now they've got it down, and like a number of other contractors, once they've done something a few times, it becomes just gravy. They know how to do it, and they can slam it out.
How many of those things in the county, the ones we were talking about were in the city, but versus the yellow things, and they just kind of have the little dip and, half domes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you told me that. I think it may have been you told me they're not called egg breakers.
No.
Half domes. How many, the magnitude of that stuff's got to be horrific.
We have 1,500 intersections that needed to be done. We've done a little over 100 so far.
And that was considered good by state standards, so you've gotten relief that you're making progress?
Well, under the DOJ consent decree, we were required to do all of our intersections. And so all of our intersections basically that have sidewalks. And so we've started on that, and it's going to take some time, and we have to finance it over the years, but we are plugging away, and every year we're putting out a contract for curb ramps.
Oh, Godspeed.
Well, it's government speed. And
yeah, at Godspeed. Not at, yeah, okay, fine. Four
government
for four.
Speed, 10 years.
All righty. Thanks for coming by, bud. See everybody tomorrow.
Bye.